Broadcasting from the Prime Meridian Bank Studios in the capital city of Tallahassee, this is Front Row Knowles with Tom Block and Keith Jones. Front Row Knowles is brought to you by Hobson Chevrolet of Cairo, Georgia. Get your best deal the Hobson way.
Everybody, Tom Block and Keith Jones with you. Welcome to Front Row Knowles. KJ, how are you, sir?
I'm wishing that I was mature enough, although I'm old enough, but not mature enough, to have made some notes in early April of 2022 and then early April of 2023 and see whether we have replicated or exceeded the bandwagon as we get ready for football and spring game, spring showcase.
Well, we're well on the way to exceeding that, Keith. I'm not sure if you've noticed the pattern, but whatever a team's flaws are, we talk about Florida State. If they're grave flaws in January, by February, they're not quite as glaring. And by March and April, all of a sudden, we've smoothed that over. And by the time we get to August, there are no flaws. This is the pattern that repeats itself on an annual basis.
So what you're saying is the Kool-Aid is well served, well chilled, and very, very sweet.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. We're going to talk with our Osceola insider, Bob Ferrante. We're taping on Tuesday. I actually got a chance to get out to practice for a little bit, KJ, and this is a very simple statement, but it's true. And every year that Norvell's been here, when you go out and look at the group collectively, more guys fit the part. You can look around, and it used to be, count them on one hand, candidly, the first year, right? And then you needed both hands, and maybe you needed to take a shoe off to get there. And now you're up to three quarters of the roster or more. I mean, it's a good looking group out there on the whole when you look at them that way.
Their strength, their speed, their improvement, what you are focused now on, and Coach Norvell and his staff would be the first to tell you, is we got to take these athletes who have a propensity to maybe be good at football players and then make them a team.
That is the objective for the next couple of weeks leading up to the April 20th spring football. What did we decide it is? Game, showcase?
Showcase.
Happening, event, something like that. Anyway, this is Front Row Knowles. Bob Ferrante will join us next. Stay with us. We are just getting cranked up here on this week's edition of Front Row Knowles.
Front Row Knowles is presented by Hobson Chevrolet of Cairo, Georgia. Get your best deal the Hobson way. Now back to Tom and Keith.
Back on Front Row Knowles, it is time to open up that Earl Bacon Agency hotline, the Earl Bacon Agency, ensuring your future together. And we say hello to our Osceola insider, Bob Ferrante. Hello to our Osceola insider, Bob Ferrante. How are you, Bob?
Gentlemen, great. How are you all?
We are taping on Tuesday, and Bob, I'll let you react as somebody who's been out to football practice much more than I have been. But Keith, since I actually was at practice, go ahead and claim it, the stake in the ground. And then I'm going to suggest that the portion of practice that I saw, Bob, looked a lot like a bunch of talented quarterbacks throwing to a bunch of talented receivers, but they really had not spent a ton of time throwing to one another historically, i.e. it was a little rough around the edges. So was that today? Is that kind of what you've seen so far in the spring? Sess.
Yeah, I think that's been the context maybe to grade DJ Uiagalelei is this is all pretty new to him. Again, he's maybe 4 months into an offense as a guy with 4 years of college experience. So that's why it doesn't look as sharp as everybody maybe wants it to be, especially with all these new receiving pieces too. And, you know, there are some great new pieces like Jalen Lucas. We should never judge small packages out on the football field because the smallest guy on the field is probably one of the most exciting guys to watch. And he had a great Tuesday night on the practice field, for example. Malik Benson has been great. So there are really, really good moments. I think coaches like to maybe not critique, but lament that it's not as consistent, not as good as they want it to be this time of year. And I think we're hearing that, you know, a good amount from Coach Norvell, not necessarily bad things. in the big picture, in the micro, what did you see on this particular day? Yeah, it doesn't look as clean as you'd want it to.
But Bob, we're now in year five of Mike Norvell, and he's been as about as transparent and honest as anybody who's ever coached this game at the Division I level. But he likes what he sees, even if it's not crisp, even if it's not a finished product. If you judge the comments of the head coach, he likes what he sees.
100%, 100%. I think, and that's a little bit of it, almost feels like a combination of the spring training mindset, a little bit of that recruiting national signing day. We got the guys we wanted. I'm not going to throw any back in the pond. We like them all. They're all good fish, right? It's a little bit of that, but I also think, the highs, they see enough of those highs that it excites them. Just to see what the group can look like, just with more time. It truly, to me, we've always said spring practices are for the younger guys throughout, historically how we gauge springs. I almost wonder if with the portal now, do we need to maybe step back and say, with all the new pieces, and I think there's 25 or so between the early enrollees and the transfers. There's so many new pieces at every position group. It almost feels like you weigh spring differently. It's big for a senior. It's big for competition. It's big for every little element of what you do. It almost just feels different than it maybe might have back in the 80s or 90s or whatnot.
Yeah, you're not going to have the continuity and guys being on the same roster together 3 or 4 years. I mean, look at last year. We felt everybody returned for Florida State, but it wasn't like they were returning for their fourth and fifth years. They were returning for their second year in the offense, right? Catching passes from Jordan. I'll tell you, I want to go back and I've heard this from a lot of different angles, but seeing it in person, Jalen Lucas does look like he's shot out of a cannon. It's something to behold. And this kid is only 5'9", but he's thick with a low center of gravity. And if you blink, you just missed him, and he covered 25 yards of turf. He's been impressive so far.
I mean, the best way I can maybe describe it is he's a little smaller than Ja'Kai Douglas. They're obviously brothers, but faster. And Ja'Kai's fast too, right? But I mean, when he gets the ball in the open field, he turns a corner. He just seems to have that knack. Is it the capability of reading the defenses? Is it the play design? Is it how the quarterback gets him the ball in timing? I think maybe it's just a little bit of all those factors. I think that was a guy in the transfer portal, collection of new talent. He went under the radar for sure. I mean, we thought this is a great pickup as a kick returner. Maybe he's a punt returner. Maybe he's a slot receiver type. I don't want to say he's going to be top three in rushing yards by the end of 2024. But he looks like a guy who's going to help you move the ball down the field, whether it's rushing, receiving, in the return game. And it feels like a guy who's really going to be impactful. And I think we've kind of hit the storyline a lot, with our Osceola staff, with you guys. I love the multi-year transfers. Jalen being a guy with 2 years of eligibility left to play, that's the beauty of a guy like this. Like, he's got some toe of Philly in him, in that you can say, well, man, year one, he's going to be growing, but his year two could be even more special. That's kind of the beauty of some of these multi-year transfers that Norvell and staff have brought in.
It does appear, Bob, that Coach likes his running back core. And though he didn't say much about Cam, the fact that he simply said he looks like he belongs spoke volumes to me.
Him, just watching him walk up to the Moore Athletic Center off and on for visits, he's the most well-built 18-year-old prospect we've seen. Pat Burnham calls him Baby Herschel, and it's not to put any amount of burden on him in terms of what he's going to be productive-wise. He's an incredibly well-built young man as far as strength and conditioning. You put shoulder pads on him, and you go, that's not an 18-year-old, but it is. And he played quarterback at the high school level out of necessity. I know that happens a lot in high school football, but he feels like a guy who's catching up from a pass protection standpoint. He can obviously run the ball. It feels like he's kind of stepped in here, him, Roydell Williams, Toa Fili, maybe Keziah Holmes. This feels like a really good, deep running back room. And I know we should almost be lamenting, yes, Florida State lost Trey Benson, but there's still a lot of really good pieces. And Norvell loves that committee approach. So, yeah, I think Cam is definitely in that mix. If you were going to say who's the freshman, the guy out of this 24 class who can be impactful, I think most of us would put Cam number one right now. And that's through six practices, but I think he's that guy.
Keith, I don't want to get on the hyperbole train here, so I will just state for the record that this is just not a completely accurate comparison. But remember that video from back in your day on the Bobby Bowden show where he's got Ron Simmons on and Ron is introducing himself and he doesn't have a shirt on and he's chiseled and he says, "I'm Ron Simmons from Warner Robins, Georgia." The point being, and I'm not saying Cam looks like that, but he definitely gets your attention of how in the world, to your point, Bob, is that kid 18 years old? It like the math doesn't compute when you look at it. He looks like he's got a 25-year-old body right now, and he's been doing this for his life.
And by the way, Tommy, there was two guys in that introduction. The other one was Ivory Joe Hunter from Leon High School, who was also as chiseled and built, just wasn't as big. So yeah, those two guys were boy, men amongst boys or men amongst young men early on in Coach Bowden's tenure.
I'm glad you didn't say that it was you because I didn't remember you being in that video.
No, I
So,
was asked to sprint to that interview and I was late because they were timing me with a sundial.
hey, Bob, I don't think anybody's going to disagree with what you just said about a freshman making an impact. And I'm not suggesting this guy will, given the depth of talent at his position. And bear in mind, folks, I've watched 45 minutes of FSU spring practice, right? But I thought Kai Bates looked pretty good as a kid in there. Has he had a good spring, or was it just that I caught a pretty good portion of his performance today?
yeah, I think Kai's among those freshmen that we're definitely watching in the DB group. It almost feels, yeah, I think you hit on it, that there's a lot of the corners and somewhat the safeties feel relatively established. But Kai's kind of in that second tier, along with an Edwin Joseph, guys who are going to be, I think, looked at on special teams, looked at in backup roles. If there is an injury, Kai could step in. We'll see how that plays out. It feels like the depth, especially at DB, but across the football team, we're seeing these younger players come in and very competitive, very hungry. They look like they belong, or they've really put their head into the playbook. I think these are just a lot of positives we're seeing through the spring. Guys like Kai too, for example.
And Bob, I go back to my old school approach about just listening to the coaches as Coach Norvell makes them available. But there was a little bit of a bristle event with Coach Fuller when it was suggested that maybe the DBs were performing better than he was going to envision them. And he kind of resisted that comment. He basically said, "No, we knew they were this good."
Yeah, I think there's just a confidence, from Adam Fuller that how they evaluate talent, high school portal. I remember talking to him at the luncheon before spring started, and I don't remember if it was one of my questions or somebody else's, but he basically said, after 5 years, we're pretty darn good about turning on the film, watching a guy, and saying he's not just really good, but he fits what we want to do at Florida State. And part of that is they've done a great job with the portal guys. They've done a great job, too, through high school recruiting, building those relationships, finding those guys who they feel are the right fits. And there's a lot of guys who I think when people either show up at Doak on the 20th to watch the game, the showcase, I shouldn't call it a game because everybody wants to call it a showcase now. But whether you're there at Doak or you're watching the game on TV, it's something that a lot of people are going to see these new faces and say, wow, yes, very impressive. The strength and conditioning, the development. And yeah, the coach has done a really good job of identifying that talent and getting them on campus.
Bob, you mentioned spring weekend. That's a good segue. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about what's going on the night before at the Moon that the Osceola is involved in terms of raising some dollars for a pretty important collective for Florida State football?
This was a neat idea, and this is not as much an Osceola thing as, Jerry had an idea and wanted to. I say it, Jerry's throwing a party, and he's inviting the Florida State fans to come to the Moon, and it's a fundraiser for Battle's End, obviously, but we want to make it a fun night. We want to, have panelists from the media speaking, from all different websites. We want to have, maybe some FSU football coaches, maybe some administrators and some special guests. So, we're not there to kind of dropping a full guest list, but this will be a fun event at the Moon. You can go to moonevents.com to grab those tickets. And really, we promise you it's going to be a fun event. You're going to learn about some of these new faces. They'll get you excited for the showcase. And there's going to be some players, there's going to be some coaches. So I think it'll be a really, really cool event. And obviously, we all know where NIL is going. We all know you have to be on the train for NIL for Florida State to be successful. I think a lot of fans are, and really, this is a good chance to meet a lot of those players and to understand and to see where that money's going. It's going to them and their future.
So that's
Bob,
coming up
some
April
can.
19th. Go ahead,
Excuse me,
Keith.
Tommy. April 19th. Bob, changing gears just a little bit. The diamond and the circle. Florida State's kind of regrouped and recouped, and both baseball and softball back off a little bit of a down thing, but very much the trajectory is very up right now.
Yeah, Florida State, with the win over Jacksonville Tuesday night, 23 wins, and that's significant because that matches last season's win total of 23, and we're roughly at the midpoint of the 2024 season. So I think, Link Jarrett's very much in the moment, in the pitch to pitch, inning to inning. I think even he has taken some time of late to appreciate just the how far this program has come. And it's because of so many new faces, but it's really in large part because of hitting the portal and hitting in a big way. I do think NIL is a success story for bringing a lot of players to Tallahassee, for retaining some of the big bats like a James Tibbs, like a Cam Smith. This is a team that I think we've seen some of their bad nights. Yes, like Clemson. I watched a not so great game against Louisville on Friday night. But the way they bounce back, the way they respond from losses, has been a really positive storyline to me overall. Just how baseball can just learn from those losses. We know what happened at Clemson, but then when I went to Jacksonville a week ago to see Florida State put up 14 runs on Florida, was something phenomenal in that ballpark, in that kind of setting with that crowd, mostly I'd say 70% Gator fans, for Florida State to put on that kind of a show. So I don't know what the Seminoles are going to do, where the season's going to end up. I think people might be getting a little too excited to be thinking about Omaha already. It's only early April, but I think we're all kind of enjoying this ride, just watching the growth of this program after what was really a tough transition year for Florida State. But it feels like they're doing so many things very, very well, from hitting and pitching to fielding. Yes, the bullpen had its issues at Clemson, but we've seen some bullpen bounce back too. So it's a team that's very much, I think, a fun, enjoyable night at the ballpark.
I want to continue that baseball talk right after we take a break and talk specifics about the two guys at the top of the statistical charts, the two names you just mentioned. So stay with us. More Front Row Noles right after this.
Be sure to subscribe to the Front Row Noles podcast and follow at Front Row Noles on Twitter. Now back to at underscore Tom Block and Twitterless Keith Jones. Yes, you heard us right, in the Prime Meridian Bank Studios.
Tom Block, Keith Jones back with you, along with our Osceola insider, Bob Ferrante, who joins us on the Earl Bacon Agency hotline, the Earl Bacon Agency, ensuring your future together. And Bob, continuing this baseball theme, I think we're literally halfway through the season right now, I guess, or just about at that mark. I mean, Cam Smith is hitting 435 and James Tibbs is hitting 413. Now, I'm not suggesting they're going to finish there. Competition's going to be tougher the second half of the season collectively than it was the first. But what are your general thoughts about those two guys in particular? I mean, Tibbs has 12 homers. He had three more hits on Tuesday night. Cam Smith, I know he had a forgettable game defensively against Louisville, but he's been really good this year. He's on base every game. Those two are pretty talented players.
I think the best thing I can just say is you watch them and they're professional hitters. And you get that feeling when you're watching guys like that, like a Cal Raleigh, a Matthew Nelson through the years. I mean, just those guys who have elevated their game to something, I'd just say remarkable. The thing with Tibbs, for example, he doesn't strike out all that much. I mean, his eye at the plate, his ability to make contact, he's an improving fielder. I didn't think we would see a James Tibbs as a fielder as good as he is. Cam Smith, for example, big body, great frame, almost like that prototypical third baseman that you would, major league teams would say that's what a third baseman should look like. And yeah, again, I saw him at one of his very worst Friday night with those errors. I think he had three of them, and it was just a totally out of character night. But the way he fields, the way he's got that strong arm, opposite field power, you know, getting doubles off the wall, it's really a fun part of that lineup to watch, because when they're batting, you almost want to lock in on every single pitch just to see what those guys, what their approach is and what they can do with the ball. It might not be the best pitch that they're looking for, but again, how they make contact, get on base, drive runs in. It's a really fun lineup. I know we've hit on it before, but the 1-9 aspect of this team has been really, really cool to watch.
Guys, the thing that jumps out at me, you'll recall 2 or 3 years ago, we would talk about the football team and we would say they do real well and then something bad would happen and they felt like they couldn't overcome it. And as a result, the bad would become worse. I mean, you talk about bouncing back and the bad becoming better as opposed to becoming worse. Complete meltdown of your bullpen at Clemson and you bounce back. Four errors in one game against Louisville and you bounce back. I mean, there's some characteristics of this baseball program that somewhat mirror what we've seen happen on the football field.
Right. I think rooted in experience and been there and been through the growing pains, leadership, confidence, how much of that is coaching and just repetition through the regular season, through the off season, Cape Cod leagues and such for a lot of these guys. I think it's the total package to some degree. It's a combination of these strike me as very much player coaches, but not soft at all. Like very much instilling confidence in the players to get the best out of them. I think Link Jarrett hit on it a bunch of times. Like they took the bus up to Clemson. Imagine that bus ride coming back from Clemson after not just three losses, but two really miserable, the bullpen messed it up defeats. And Link goes, I think he said it twice. That was an 8-hour bus ride back. And then on Tuesday, you got to take the bus over to Jacksonville to go play Florida. And you have every opportunity to think that game could have gone sideways too. But it is what's a neat component of this team. Experience, leadership, intangibles, coaching. I think that's kind of what has us optimistic, because on its best day, this team is really capable of something special, really.
Bob, I've got a bus story real quick. Keith could share some from basketball where Carter perhaps was supposed to have wings and it just had wheels for a return trip. But the one that comes to mind related to baseball, 11 was coaching, and I don't remember the year, but FSU was playing Carolina, and they were playing in Cary because UNC was having its stadium redone. And Florida State was leading 4-3 in the eighth. They kicked the ball at third base. The floodgates open, and UNC scores, I don't know, 8 runs and wins 11-3, something like that, 11-4. Well, the bus driver, after dropping the team at the stadium, had gone to dinner and met his wife for dinner, like in Raleigh, in Cary. Then he came back to get the team, but he inadvertently left the bus keys on the table or at the restaurant or whatever. So Florida State had just kicked one in the eighth inning and now had to sit outside the bus at an empty field as the lights are out, waiting 2 hours for the driver to return with the keys. And I'll just say that that 2 hours probably felt at least as long as the drive back from Clemson after what happened 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Keith, feel free to share any bus stories you'd like to, but
My best bus story was early in my career broadcasting basketball. Steve Robinson was still the coach. We played at Georgia Tech and lost a game that we should have won. And Steve tells the Dobo, the director of basketball operations, to cancel the charter and tells the Astro bus driver to drive us home. Between Thomasville and Tallahassee at 4 o'clock in the morning, we hit a deer because Coach Robinson's sitting in the right front seat. The bus driver's driving. I'm about 3 seats behind. We hit this deer, big, loud noise. And Coach Robinson goes, "Was that a deer?" And the bus driver said, "Coach, I hope so."
All right. I think we're through with bus story. Unless you have, Bob, you got any bus stories you'd like to share?
This is where Chip Baker would jump in and tell his bus story too, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. That one has a happier ending. Yes. Well, no, I guess it doesn't in light of it. But, I mean, that was a heroic situation and occasion for Chip and 11 back in the day. I forget where I was going on this. Oh, I was just looking around. So Andy Enfield, as we're speaking about basketball, just accepted the head coaching job at SMU. So he quoting him, you know, they had it pretty good in L.A. He was living at the beach, and he would not have taken the SMU job if it wasn't for the ACC. So, Bob, I'll ask you, do you think 5 years from now that will be a great decision or perhaps teetering?
I wonder what his wife said when he came home and said, honey, we're moving to Dallas. Let's pack up the beach house and go to Dallas. Nothing against Dallas. Love it. Great barbecue, right? This is a really interesting move because you're leaving a program where you were there for a decade. You're going to go to the Big Ten. In theory, you've got resources. You don't have the budget issues of UCLA, which is in, a financial mess, right? But SMU and Dave Hart's son is the athletic director at SMU. So there are some interesting connections here. I'm not sure how much, you know, that played a factor. Did they know each other through the FSU grapevine back in the day? But I think this is a really interesting hire. Always had a ton of respect for Andy. If you remember back in the day when Florida State was leading the nation in free throw percentage, it was because of a guy like Andy Enfield, because he put such an emphasis on it. And they were truly the nation's best team at shooting free throws. This is before he got a name as the Dunk City guy at Florida Gulf Coast, but obviously happy for Andy, great coach. And yeah, he gets to be part of the new ACC too, right?
Very happy for Andy. And if I'm not mistaken, Enfield still is number 2 or number 3 or number 4 on the all-time NCAA collegiate free throw shooting percentage as a player. The thing that's interesting to me though, guys, remember SMU is coming into the ACC and they are not taking any television dollars for, what, 6, 7, 8 years? Phenomenal.
Enfield, was that at Johns Hopkins he played when he set that record? Is that where
I believe that's correct.
I'm just going to go out on a limb and suggest that they probably didn't have 12 million viewers for any of his games, like the women's game between LSU and Iowa did on Monday night. Did you see that TV number? And were you guys watching?
I have not seen a ton of Caitlin Clark this year. I did watch a good chunk of it and thought it was really exciting theater for the sport. To not have a dog in the fight, so to speak, to not really care as much if LSU or Iowa won. I thought it was an entertaining contest, and I think Caitlin put up 40 or so with those free throws late. So it was really good to see that, and that's an incredible number for women's college basketball, by the way. I mean, that's I think we were excited about softball last June when it was doing somewhere around 1.5, maybe close to 2 million. So for women's hoops to do this is pretty cool. Very cool.
9 made threes in a ball game will win you some contests, women, men, middle school, or otherwise.
It was impressive. Big. All the basketball is doing big numbers right now. I'm surprised on the men's side. We'll let you go after this, Bob. But the men's games are drawing really well, too. And this is in the era of, I mean, let's be honest. Bob, you're in the media. You cover this. The average college basketball fan can't name 5 college basketball players because they're not there more than a year. I mean, you don't have the Christian Laettner who's been at Duke for 4 years anymore. And yet, despite that, if you look at the men's ratings, they're up as well. Any theories on what's going on?
I really don't. And this is maybe just a anecdotal thing I've picked up from some other national folks listening to podcasts. It almost seems like we used to watch and absorb college basketball late, you know, really late in the schedule. Sometimes it'd be after the bowl games, and sometimes it would be, you know, you're kind of catching up at the midpoint. It almost seems like we're catching up when the conference tournaments start, or when, you know, the field is announced, that field of 68 is announced, when we get out our brackets, we print them out, or we do them online. It seems like we're jumping on late. And I won't say I've watched a ton of NC State, but I mean, what a remarkable story that they go through the field and win 5 games, you know, in Washington to win the ACC title. And then they're able to make this run that I don't think anybody would have projected to the Final Four, but it is really interesting for a sport to have such, I think, crazy numbers for the postseason itself. I'm not sure what the biggest numbers were, maybe outside of a Duke or Carolina regular season game. I mean, it doesn't seem like there are big numbers. Maybe some of those Michigan, Ohio State type games on a Fox national broadcast have done well too, but it is pretty impressive. The numbers are being done in this, the March Madness this time around.
Guys, the mere fact that the Wolfpack is in the Final Four, given that when the ACC tournament began in Washington, they were not even on the bubble. They weren't in. The only way they get in, even if they win that fourth game and lose in the final, they might not get in. They had to win all 5 to get that guaranteed automatic bid, and look what they've done with it.
Yeah, it is a run reminiscent of the cardiac pack. I don't know that they have 2 more in them, but we wouldn't have said that they were going to beat who they beat back in 83 either. Bob, we will let you get running. Appreciate your insight as always, sir.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Our Osceola insider, Bob Ferrante. Keith and I will be back to wrap things up right after this on Front Row Noles.
Be sure to subscribe to the Front Row Noles podcast and follow at Front Row Noles on Twitter. Now back to @_TomBlock and Twitterless Keith Jones. Yes, you heard us right, in the Prime Meridian Bank Studios.
Welcome back to Front Row Noles. Keith, before I opine, I got a couple things I want to hit, but anything you'd like to piggyback on that Bob led to there?
Well, in our first segment with Bob, I made reference to Coach Norvell and to Coach Adam Fuller. And in terms of just listening to Coach speak and how they're expressing themselves relative to progress in the spring. Then I threw the bait out there for the baseball team and the softball team. And Bob jumped all over the baseball team. We didn't talk about the circle, which tells me, knowing Bob, he's pretty excited about this baseball team. And Lonnie and her group has done very well, but Link and his group has caught Bob's attention, I think.
Baseball getting to 23-4 when 23 is the total games they won all of last year is pretty remarkable. Not to say buy your tickets to Omaha, but baseball is a funny sport, Keith. I mean, I look back at it, and And two of the best Florida State baseball teams that I watched, and my history with FSU baseball starts in the late 80s, I guess. One would be the 97 team with J.D. Drew, which didn't make it to Omaha. And another would be the, I think it was the 02 Noles that won 25 straight until Notre Dame came in and beat them 2 out of 3 in the Super Regional. So that is my way of saying, are they going to go 23-4 over the next 27 games? No. But does it mean one? It's just a matter of being hot in May. You want from May 15th till whenever your last out comes, you're playing good baseball then, you got a chance.
Well, they talk about hitting and defense, and certainly with 4 errors in one game and the Louisville series, you may doubt the defense. But if I've read correctly, you make sure I'm right. This is the third best hitting team in Division I baseball right now. And as we say in the insurance business, production solves all problems. You hit it a 340, 345 clip as a team, that'll cover up some glaring bullpen and or errors issues.
Yeah, it certainly will. Although those are not as great as they have been at other times. Hey, we got a couple minutes left. I want to send a shout out to Ron Vetrano, who is a friend of ours. Keith, he's been on this program before. He's a sportscaster, a recovering sportscaster like you and I, right? But he's worked in TV trucks for ESPN and ABC and all different networks for years. And as he told me when I saw him on Tuesday, he's got a school teacher schedule. He's off for the next 4 months until football season starts, right? So I was a little envious. But we've had him on to talk about the Giovanni Vetrano Foundation. So I just want to mention this. Giovanni was his son who died tragically a couple of years ago. And Ron channeled all the emotions behind that into creating the Giovanni Vetrano Foundation, which raises funds for scholarships for local soccer players. And they had their banquet on Tuesday night. He invited me to sit on the board this year and participate. And so I did that. And it was a great event and an impressive group of applicants. And certainly congratulations to the three finalists, LB May, Megan Roper, and Martina Silva. They all were awarded scholarships. Martina got the grand prize, if you will, so to speak. But kudos to Ron and Mike Famy and the rest of the board for the work that they do on that. It was good to see.
$10,000 in scholarships awarded to those three young ladies. And those parents and others that are familiar with soccer know that they have the little tournament that they play amongst the Tallahassee schools this year, including both the boys and the girls, the men and the women. And Ron has really, and I applaud you as a member of the board, has done great, gone to great lengths to remember Gio, as his friends knew him, and to support the soccer community, the high school soccer community in Tallahassee. So I applaud all of you. Work well done.
It's a job well done. So kudos to Ron and Mike and Ron's daughter, Emily, who really have worked hard on that. Hey, final thought. I want to go back to this women's basketball topic real quick, Keith. For our listeners' sake, some of you may know, some of you may not, but the way I started in broadcasting was when I was in school at FSU. I used to announce the FSU women's basketball games. So I traveled with the team. Ultimately, that led to me calling games on Sunshine Network, which led to all the other broadcasting I've had a chance to do for the most part. But the point being, I went about probably 32 years straight where I called or announced at least one women's basketball game. Now, for the last 2 or 3 years, I haven't announced any games. And so last year, I think it was the Final Four. Maybe it was the national semifinals, but it was in the women's tournament. And my wife, our listeners know, went to LSU. And so I had turned on the TV on a Friday night waiting for the LSU women's game to start. And the preceding game was Iowa and whoever they were playing last year. So this is a year ago. And I had not heard of Caitlin Clark. I didn't follow the sport closely enough to know this. And I'm just watching this game, and she's making three-pointers from 10 feet beyond the arc, and she's throwing behind-the-back passes. And I'm looking at my wife and I'm thinking, this is the best women's college basketball player I've ever seen. I've never heard of her. And I didn't know if it was a player just having an out of her mind experience that night or if it was somebody legit. So I quickly Googled, and lo and behold, she was already player of the year and all this. I just was not tuned into it. And now here we are a year later, and she's even better than she was a year ago. But it's amazing to watch. She's tremendously talented. I don't know how it'll finish up given the road that they have to play. But a fun story for women's college basketball, certainly.
There is legitimacy in saying that the college game on the men's side, as well as the NBA, is all about nothing but athleticism. the women's game. I don't watch a bunch of WNBA, but certainly collegiate women's game is about teamwork. And you take a star like Caitlin, and I think the bigger number for her, she scored 41 last time out, headed to the Final Four, but 12 assists. That's a remarkable number, men, women, high school, college, NBA, middle school. And for her to combine those two, the ability to score and the ability to dish, she's an exciting, exciting player to watch. And Iowa is a great team to watch.
Yeah, yeah, it's been great for the sport. All right, we're out of time. Keith, we're getting closer to the spring football game. You and I will reconvene next week. Until then, folks, he's Keith, I'm Tom, and this is Front Row Knowles.